tend to be near each other, so you can have thousands of them on like a ceiling like this in a cave. And that white nose syndrome just moves from bat to bat. And what happens is it starts to coat the outside of their body and around their nose. And when it's starting to coat around their nose, they will start becoming active, and then they're flying around. The problem is they're a very tiny animal. And when they had gone into hibernation, they had stored enough fat to survive in a hibernating state, not in an active state. And when they begin flying in those caves, there's no food in there for them. There's no insects in there. And so that's why they're dying, is they're using up and depleting their body fat. And here in Minnesota, two of our major hibernation areas, like I said, we've lost like 90% of the population in both. And so, you know, just the transient nature of society nowadays and how we can quickly move, we find it wonderful, but we don't always know we're carrying things. And so, for example, I might have gone caving in a cave in Europe, and then I flew home, and then it's like, oh, I still have 3 days of vacation. I'm going to cave down in, you know, like in Tennessee or in Kentucky. And then you take your caving gear with you. You don't sterilize it, and that's how we're transporting things. And because we can quickly move from Tennessee and Kentucky to Minnesota to the caves in South Dakota, you know, just within hours, and we're transporting these things because of our ease of movement, and unknowingly we're moving a lot of things. The Wegmans, they themselves didn't move a lot of things here, but they did change the landscape when they came. And they actually moved into a site that was logged off partially. When our park was established, it was just a park on paper. Some of the properties were already taken out by logging companies because the man who would get the homestead claim I had mentioned earlier, you could have it for a year. When you look at a lot of the abstracts, the land ownership abstracts, the person who was given it was usually a military veteran. And then on the day he got the title, 1 year later, he sold it to his boss, who was in a lumber company. And that's how the timber industry's got so many holdings within Itasca. My property, just 5 miles north of here, the man served in the military. He had his property. All he did was built a small little shack on it because he had to do some improvement. And then I saw the land title change happen on the day the government said, it is yours. That same day, he signed it over to his boss, who was T.B. Walker of the Walker Logging Company, wow, which is very big in Oregon and Washington State. And on my property, we have, in my garden, we have found a horseshoe as well as a bottle. And the bottle is like a liquor bottle, but oftentimes they would put kerosene in them because you have to put kerosene on your two-man saw to keep the pine pitch from gumming up your saw. Mm-hmm. So they would put kerosene in them. Mm-hmm. And that bottle, when I researched it, because of the design of the bottle and the color of the glass and how the bubbles appear and how the top is put on, that bottle was only made between something like 1903 and 1912. So we know that property was logged off in that window, which is the window Mr. Walker was here. And so that's how some of these lumber companies were very easily moving in, because people say, well, how could they buy the land if it was homestead land? They sent their staff out to do it. They sent their employees. If you have 200 men working in a logging camp or 100 men, it's very easy to take out 100 homestead claims by pre-sending out your staff to pre-assess the forest in an area and encouraging their staff to go out to get up homestead claims and then paying them off and then acquiring the land that way. Mm-hmm. We're going to step outside because nobody seemed to find the light switch. Was there a light switch back there? No. No, kerosene lanterns. This actually was the store. The homesteaders would come here and buy fabric and kerosene. audacity to camp in the park, which
the audacity.
Flex on his house?
Property and that was our campground. And all day long, he'd see cavorting out there, flaunting their skin, and it's like, seriously, it's like 4 inches of your ankle. But that was times and trends. But he did make a lot of money off of them. That he actually tried farming. And when we get outside, I'll show you a picture of his farm. But again, he only grew hay for the local local men for their horse teams,
like,
because he
sounds
couldn't grow
trash.
Crops. And
man,
he found he could make a ton more money on his store. So much so that
trash,
he and his wife actually built
a
two-story house, and they had a massive barn.
Man.
So when we step out, let's wait on this side, and I'll show you a picture across the road of what it looked like.
The cabin is terrible.
The way
it was a store.
The cabin is creepy.
And that's the real one.
You want to see terrible, that's the real one.
You know what you get? Broke down and busted.
What he gets. What he gets is the memorialization.
Yeah. Somehow, huh?
That's what he gets.
Important.
No, I actually, one of our
you
former
think it,
staff.
You gotta think
here.
About it.
So, you know, when people come on ITASC and they go, wow, look at these trees, and they're driving up Main Park Drive. Preacher's Grove, yes, those are 300-year-old trees. This, no. Those trees on the other side were planted in the 1930s and 1940s. And actually, about after 1946, when Johanna passed away and the park acquired the property. So that pine plantation is relatively new as we're restoring it. But typical homes would not have been any bigger than the cabin we were just in. And so for school kids, when I'm sharing with them, this store cut it in half, and that would have been the normal size of an early homesteader's house. And they're like, well, where would we have slept? And I said, well, up in a loft. And you would have shared that loft with all your brothers and sisters, unless you were a baby and you'd be on a trundle bed or a cradle. And they're like, are you kidding? And I said, well, how many of you have your own bedroom? Every single kid raised their hand that they have their own bedroom. The sizes of homes and the footprints of our homes have gotten bigger. And that's kind of the scary part, too, is we all want to have our own home and our own property. But when you have areas like the Red River Valley and Fargo, and they're opening up the prime agricultural land for housing development, and we're losing prime land for growing crops, it's kind of one of those things that cities maybe have to look at how they expand out for the resources. This here is Mr. McMullen's home. 1900, 1901, but then the first log drive came. Because when our park was established, we were trying to buy the land from the lumber companies and keeping the trees on it. And part of the negotiation was, this is what Itasca looked like when we were heavily forested. But timber crews would come through freezing up the timber, and they were the ones who would send their employees out to take up that one-year homestead claim to acquire the land to get the timber. And in the summertime, when it was time to harvest on their land, they would come in the summer and build their logging camp. And then come winter, all these homesteaders that were done farming and trying to pull in their crops, they would come and work in the logging camps in winter so they could survive. Because they had no other way of making money. And so they would work in the logging camps, and in the winter they would use the snow and ice to their advantage, and they would create skid roads like the one up here, where road monkeys would go out at 1 a.m. and ice the road so that at 6 a.m. the logging crews could be out cutting trees already and hauling loads of logs. And they would haul them, and this is a picture Mary Gibbs took. She took all these pictures. These are decked on Lake Itasca. They're on the ice on Lake Itasca. Thousands and thousands of logs.
So they, where would they take them after they decked them on Lake Itasca? To the river? To
what they would do is they would wait. You got the question, you got your own answer. Because what comes with the end of winter? Your water levels start to rise. And what they would do is they would deck it on Itasca. This was the headwaters in spring. If we were there at the time this picture was taken, standing at the rocks, we'd be in water this deep. You'd be up to water, like up to your chin. And that was so they could float those logs downriver. Here you can see some of the logs on Lake Itasca. The problem is Lake Itasca does not have a current. Like some lakes have a current that goes through them. Itasca doesn't. So what they would have to do is they would boom the logs into a group. By booming them, what they would do is they would cut thin aspen logs, kind of like these little balsam poplar here, the thin ones. They would link them together with a chain, making like a necklace of thin poles. They would wrap it around maybe 5 acres of logs on the lake. Then they would take a boat with a raft with a capstan on it. Capstan is that winch in the middle. They would hook a chain to that necklace full of logs. They would row that raft out in front of that boom of logs towards the headwaters of the Mississippi, anchor the raft down, and that crew of, what, about 12 men would walk in a circle, winching those logs down the shore of Lake Itasca. And when they did that, the waves were going like this, destroying the shore. And not only that, but to have enough water to float these logs down our Mississippi River, let me see here.
Can you go back to that picture real quick?
This one or the other one? Okay. You can see the guys winching them. Some of the bigger lakes, like Bemidji or Lake of the Woods, they actually could put horses on the platform to do the work. But Itasca's pretty small, so they relied on men to do it. This is your question. There is the headwaters of the Mississippi River. It is actually where, if you drove your car to the parking lot of Mary Gibbs Center, right where your car goes across the stone bridge, that's where this dam was. This was a sluice gate dam. They could raise and lower the gate and flush the logs through. This was 1903. 1901 was this dam in the same location. It was a blowout dam. What a blowout dam is, you actually blew up the center with dynamite and all the logs went out at once. And if all your water left and some of your logs, they were left high and dry. But imagine hundreds of thousands of logs. And we're not talking little things like what's here now in Itasca. We're talking logs where, like, if four of us put our arms out, a tree, you know, the size of four of us with our arms connected, going down the river. And imagine hundreds of thousands of those, the damage it did to the river. And back in that day, though, Boom and Truss Company, they were a separate company from the lumber companies, though oftentimes owned and invested by the same people. Boom and Truss Companies had the right under Minnesota law to make changes to our river system for the betterment of the economy of our state. So they were allowed to do that back then. And they drove in 1901 this Minnesota on the Iron Range, it was 80% unemployment. So there's 20 of us here. Four of you would have had jobs, the rest of us wouldn't. And so what happened is a lot of dads lost their jobs, and in order to feed their families, they took jobs that normally were taken by high school and college age boys. And so those college age and high school age boys became delinquents because they had no work. And Franklin Delano Roosevelt created a whole series of programs to employ American citizens again. And when he was young, he was in a Boy Scouts program before his polio, and he knew the value of being outside and learning from preserving our natural resources. Just like his relative Theodore Roosevelt, they loved the outdoors, they felt the need to preserve it for your health. And then he created the Civilian Conservation Corps, which was for 18 to 24-year-old young boys. You had to prove that your family was in need for money, and these young men were stationed in camps all across the United States doing conservation projects. Here at Itasca, we had four camps. They built most of the rental cabins down by Douglas Lodge. They built Forest Inn. They built the swim beach building and the swim beach. They built Bear Paw Campground. They did most of our roads, most of our hiking trails. They did fire breaks. They planted trees. I mean, they did a ton of stuff, and they learned. Said, and we're going to get walking now to our next site. We always knew when the end of the month